Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today on the podcast, we're going to discuss a topic that somehow I missed. I mean, this is fundamental resus and critical care, and yet I don't remember discussing it at any great length on the podcast. I know I've mentioned a few aspects, but the topic is ventilator alarms, and this is key. This is one of the things that could keep your patients alive if you have the right process in place in your resus or critical care unit. Now, before we get to that, just a quick announcement. I speak every year at Essentials of Emergency Medicine. I think it's one of the best conferences out there in EM. And this year, because they want to acknowledge that there's a lot of crossover between the MCRIT fans and the Essentials of EM attendees, they want to throw us a little party or a get-together or a little drinking event. I don't know quite what it's going to be. It probably depends on how many people say they're going to show up. But they're going to do something. But they need to know who you are. So if you're going to go to Essentials of Emergency Medicine, if you're thinking of registering, please register with the code MCRIT19, MCRIT and the year of the Essentials, which is 2019. So MCRIT19. And that way they'll know you're out there. Now, if you've already registered for Essentials, good for you, then just shoot me an email at mcrit.org/contact and just say, I registered and I wasn't able to put that code in because it didn't exist. And I'll forward your names to them as well. But it's going to be a great event. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I'd love to hang out with some MCRIT fans and MCRITers and people who listen at the event. It's always great meeting folks in person. So if you're interested in that, just MCRIT19 when you sign out for Essentials of Emergency Medicine in 2019, Las Vegas. All right, let's get to the show. So, vent alarms. Now, in preparation for this episode, I was searching for a really good review article I could give out in the show notes, and I have not come across one. So if you locate an amazing review article, maybe in the respiratory therapy journals where I'm not able to search as easily as the standard medical literature, please send it my way. I am super curious to see what's out there because I can't find much. The first concept I want to get across is going to sound simplistic and you're probably going to ignore it, but if you take nothing else from this episode, it's this. Ventilator alarms should be treated the same way as announcements of a patient coding, in our hospital, code blue, because essentially, until you know exactly why the vent is alarming, it could very well be that the patient is going to have a cardiac arrest as a result of a ventilator disconnection. And so instilling this culture of ventilator alarms being an emergency, you actually have to break into a run and get to the room and check the patient out, is something you need to have. And in many places I come across, that has not been instilled. People will have the vent alarming for 10, 15, 20 minutes before someone wanders over. And, a lot of it is probably alarm fatigue, which we'll discuss more in the course of this episode. But you cannot have alarm fatigue to vent alarms. It is unacceptable. I have, in the course of my career, not where I'm at currently, participated in morbidity and mortality rounds for numerous patients who were disconnected to the ventilator for extended periods of time without recognition because people are just so capable of blocking out vent alarms because they're going on all the time that they just don't regard it as a medical emergency. But it is a medical emergency right up there with someone overheading for cardiac arrest. So that is the first thing you need to instill. Now, in all the ICUs in the shock trauma center, whoever was closest to the patient's room where a vent was going off would go in and check it out, and that might have been the patient's actual bedside ICU nurse. It might have been someone just passing by, but they would check it out, and if they got in there and realized it's nothing important, the patient was coughing or anything, they would shout out to the rest of the people on the unit, "Got it," and then that let people know who were running over to that room that they could chill out, it's taken care of. And that's the only place I really saw it done to that level, where there was just so institutionalized that whoever's closest runs to the room, checks it out, and then says, "Got it," if it's not a big deal. I think it's something you should think about making happen in your place as well. Now, let's say you're the person running to the room. What are you looking for? The question you need to ask yourself is the patient crashing on the ventilator or not? Because there's a whole different algorithm for crashing on the vent and just have an event alarming. And the difference is, you know, you're going to take steps to immediately reconcile the situation and not mess around with parameters on the ventilator if they're crashing. Now, how do you know if a patient's crashing on the ventilator? Sats have dropped to near nothing. There is no end-tidal CO2. The vent is alarming, obviously. That's how you got in the room. Or the patient has a profound drop in their blood pressure that you think is related to the ventilator. And pretty much in these crashing situations, the answer is always take the ventilator itself out of the picture. So that troubleshooting step is now totally excised from your thinking. You don't have to worry, is it a vent problem or not? And the way to do that is obviously bag the patient. Now, all of our BVMs have P valves attached. If a patient is intubated, there should be a BVM with a P valve next to the bed. And that means you could start ventilating, then immediately dial the PEEP up to what the patient was on the ventilator. You just look at the screen and dial it there. Now, if there's not a PEEP valve immediately available, then you got to do what you got to do. But understand that disconnecting the patient from a ventilator when they are on high PEEP then becomes a weighing of risks and benefits because, you take the ventilator out of the picture and you could start troubleshooting for everything except the ventilator, but you also potentially have a horrible oxygenation collapse, and these patients could actually die from being disconnected from the ventilator. You know, sometimes we had patients on very high PEEPs or they were APRV, and in those patients, disconnecting them down to ZEEP, zero PEEP, could be a death sentence in and of itself. So that's why I just recommend every bedside should have a BVM with a PEEP valve on any patient who's in a resuscitative circumstance, which is every patient in the ED, or in sick ICU patients. And I think just easily the way to go is just make it universal that if a patient is intubated or has a trach in and they're on a mechanical ventilator, that right next to it is a BVM with a PEEP valve. The PEEP valves are cheap, patient death not so much. So I think that's a great way to go. And then it becomes a really easy decision. Oh, vent's alarming. The patient's looking bad. Their sats are low. Don't know what's going on. Just take the vent out of the picture until you get more help. And the help can mess with the ventilator while you bag the patient with the PEEP valve set to what their PEEP was at. That's crashing on the vent. And then, you know, the further troubleshooting on that with the DOPES algorithm and all the other stuff to go into it, I covered on a previous episode, which I will link in the show notes. But what we're really talking about now is you walk into the room and the patient's not crashing yet. Their blood pressure's fine. Their sat is fine. All right, we're going to talk about the really four most critical alarms. Now, there's others, and maybe we'll go on to another show about them. But let's talk about the ones that really matter. The first one is the high peak pressure alarm, and that's key. This is peak pressure, and this is probably one of the most common alarms. I have a study in the show notes that demonstrates that. This was a third of the alarm calls were for high airway pressure or high peak pressure. And now, this one is requires a little thinking to understand what's really going on. Now, we've already said the patient's not crashing. They're doing okay. Their sats are okay. You look up, there is indeed end-tidal CO2. But sometimes these waves could be quite small, not what you're used to when you're seeing CO2 waveforms. And that would be indicative of the patient getting only tiny breaths. And so the troubleshooting on this one is to figure out first, is this primarily a peak pressure only problem where your peak pressure is high, but your plateau pressure is normal, or a situation where both of them are high. And let's deal with the peak pressure only. Now, how do you even know which one it is? Well, you have to take a few steps right away. The first one is if your tidal volume is crazy high, your set tidal volume, for instance, I don't know why you'd be doing this, but let's say you had 12 cc's per kg or even 10 cc's per kg. For this particular troubleshooting step, I would just lower them down to 8 cc's per kg. Or even, if they're higher than this, just put them to 500. That's a very reasonable number. Just lower their tidal volume to that for the purpose of this set of tests. And once you've done that, what you need to do is you need to go into the alarm screen or the limit screen, depending on your ventilator, and you need to find the peak pressure limit or alarm on that screen. And that's usually where it is. It's usually in the limits or alarm section. And what you need to do is you need to dial up that peak pressure limit setting to whatever it takes to get the full breath delivered, to give the full 500 or 450 or whatever you have that tidal volume set. And you'll know this happened because the alarm will stop alarming. And the reason is that you need to start giving breaths in order to test A, what the plateau pressure is, and B, to keep this patient alive. Because if their peak pressure limit keeps being hit, they might get only like 20 cc's, 30 cc's before that alarm kicks in. And when the alarm kicks in, what happens is it cycles to expiration and the patient never really gets the inspirations they need. So you just dial that peak pressure alarm up and now they'll start getting breaths. And you know, that might go to, you know, it might be at 40 is the place I see most vents set out. So you put it at 50 and 60, 70, 80. I don't care, especially in a bad asthmatic. They might need 90 in order to get that breath in. Now you might say, oh no, I'm going to explode their lungs and there's going to be spewing alveoli all around the room. Well, remember what you do when the patient's crashing. You disconnect them from the ventilator, you put them on a BVM. And I promise you, when you bag them with the BVM, you are giving breaths bigger than 450 or 500, and you're forcing them in. You might be giving a pressure at its peak of 100, 120 with that BVM. You'll never even know unless you have a pressure manometer on it. But you're going to do whatever it takes to get a minimal breath in there. And whatever it takes is what it's going to. That's what the patient requires to get those minimal breaths in. And you're not going to do any damage for the limited amount of time you're actually testing. So dial that peak pressure up to whatever it takes. Now, if the patient is still alarming and they're just writhing around in bed and coughing and bucking, then that very well might be the reason you're getting this high airway pressure alarm. And at that point, you just have to get some emergent sedation in just to knock the patient down, so you could figure out that nothing else is wrong. And if that means giving, you know, a few cc's of propofol as a bolus, then do it so you could chill the patient out long enough to make sure that's the only reason you're getting these airway pressure alarms. Because if you give that propofol, the patient settles down a little and they start having a little more synchrony. And now the alarms go away, you know that was the issue. And now you could adjust the patient's analgesia and sedation regimen. If on the other hand, they're still alarming even after they are no longer fighting the ventilator in any way, you got other problems to figure out. All right, so once you've gotten them getting the breaths, now it's time to do inspiratory hold to generate a plateau pressure. And you know, this is only applicable to volume control settings, volume AC, but that's traditionally what I think most EDs and most patients early on in their course are getting anyway. So you do that inspiratory hold and you get a plateau pressure. Now this is where you can figure out, is it peak pressure only? You have a plateau of 22, but your peak pressure, you had to raise it up to 70 in order to get a breath in. Well, now you know it's peak pressure only issues. We'll go through those first, and then we'll talk about next what to do when both of them are elevated. So you have a elevated peak pressure and an elevated plateau pressure. All right, peak pressure only. First thing to do is check the circuit and make sure it's not kinked. Make sure there's not fluid pooling in your HME, for instance, or somewhere in the circuit. Look at the tube size. You weren't there for the intubation. It turns out that's a 6.5. That's going to cause you problems in terms of these airway pressure alarms. And then ask yourself, does this patient have bronchospasm? Listen to their chest. Look at their history. Are they COPD asthmatic? They might need some bronchodilators. Another super common one that could get easily missed is the patient surreptitiously biting down on the tube? And you really have to go in there and look and see, you know, has the tube that's an 8.0 been made the size of a 4.5 because the patient's biting down on it? And the solution to that, long-term analgesia sedation, but short-term solution, and maybe the long-term solution as well, is to put in a bite block of some sort to keep them from biting down on the tube. Some patients will just bite even when they're well sedated. And in those patients, a bite block will be the solution to your high airway pressure alarms. So that's primarily the things you're going to see for your elevated peak pressure. Now, when the peak and plateau pressures are high, well, then you got bigger problems because it means it's not a resistive issue. There's something actually causing, whether it's external or internal to the alveoli, a lot of problems. And so that could be a right main stem intubation. It could be a pneumothorax. It could just be horrible lungs. It could be the abdominal contents pushing up on the patient's lungs or a superedematous chest wall. But these are the troubleshooting steps. That's how you discern the difference between those two types of pressure alarm potentiators, because an elevated plateau pressure will give an elevated peak pressure, because as the plateau rises, the peak must rise. The peak is sitting above the plateau. All right, so that's the first alarm. That is your elevated airway pressure alarm. What about the opposite? What about low airway pressure, low peak pressure? All right, now this one is potentially life-threatening because the main thing you have to make sure of is, has the tube disconnected? Now, you should know this because the end-tidal CO2 will have disappeared if that's the case. And, you know, I have, not in my current place, but at the Janus General, seen a situation. I walk into the room, I've heard the vent alarming from the other side of the unit. I was placing a line or something. I hear the alarm going on the ventilator for like 5 minutes. And then I finally walk in the room and everyone's just sitting there looking at each other. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, we're waiting for the respiratory therapist because the vent's been alarming. And I look up, there's no end-tidal CO2. And so then I look down and the tubing from the ventilator is disconnected at the Y. There's no air going into the patient and no one's figured this out. You can't wait for respiratory therapy to troubleshoot alarms, especially when there's not end-tidal CO2 or a good saturation. So the first thing you do when there's a low airway pressure alarm is you trace the circuit from the inspiratory port of the ventilator all the way to the patient's tube and then back out the expiratory limb back to the ventilator. You make sure there's no disconnects because that is life-threatening. Has the endotracheal tube cuff become deflated? That's a bad one. We'll talk a little bit about the cuff actually herniating above the cords. That could do this as well. And then just the tip of the ET is still sitting in there. So they're still getting some air delivery, but not much. And they certainly can't generate any PEEP or have expiratory volumes. Now, it might be a low airway pressure alarm, or it might be the alarm we see next, which is low minute or tidal volume ventilation. So we'll talk about that cuff stuff in a second, but you can get it as a low peak pressure alarm. And then the other one is if the patient wants far more flow or volume than you're giving them, they might suck down on every breath, wanting more than you're willing to give them, and that could generate low airway pressure alarms. And the situation to that is either ask yourself, do I really need to be this low? And if you do, the patient's probably going to require additional sedation. So that is your low peak pressure alarm. All right, the third alarm is, and it'll be different on each ventilator which of the two it is, but it'll be low minute ventilation, usually represented as big V, little E, or low tidal volume, which is big V, little T. And what they're really referring to on this alarm is expiratory volume. And what this means is the ventilator's putting in what you've set it to, and then it's not getting back out the same amount or whatever amount you set it to. Now, the reason this alarm is there is to indicate the presence of cuff issues. Now, it could just be that the cuff has just, for whatever reason, someone left a syringe on it, deflated, and you could try reinflating it. But almost always when this happens, it's either the cuff has torn or the cuff has herniated above the cords. Now, there's an entire set of steps to deal with this, but I'm not going to go through them here because I've already done an MCRIT WE linked in the show notes to this episode, number 239. So just go to mcrit.org/239, and you can see how to troubleshoot these cuff issues. The other one that this could be is if the patient has a bronchopleural fistula and they're on suction, that could be sufficient to take out a lot of the volume that gets inspired before it could get out to the expiratory limb of the vent, and then you'll get an alarm. And in these cases, if you figured out that's all it is, and you still need that degree of suction, then you just have to turn the alarm down because it's going to continue alarming forever. So that was the low minute ventilation or tidal volume alarm. The last one that's really like indicates life threats is the low O2 alarm. Now, every good ventilator that goes in the ICU should have an O2 sensor in it to know if for some reason it becomes disconnected or, what's worse, connected to a wrong gas supply. Now, this really shouldn't happen because of the coatability of the various gas cylinders. So it shouldn't happen as in you thought you were putting them on oxygen, but instead you put it on air. But it can happen if the problem is further down the line than that, and it's actually the medical gas supply itself being hooked up wrong. And, you know, my Australian anesthetist, medical error extraordinaire friend, Rob Hackett, is constantly telling me that this is a real possibility. They've seen many cases in Australia and in the U.S., and so I don't want this to happen to my patients, but my ventilator has a low O2 alarm, so this is not going to happen. I will know it starts alarming instantly, whether we just didn't hook it up to the wall or if it did get hooked up to false gases. So this is a good alarm to have. And I don't know if all vents have them. I know the ones I've dealt with have. So those are the four: high airway pressure, low airway pressure, low minute or tidal volume ventilation, which is really expired volume, and then the low O2 alarm. Now, I will stress again, because it's probably the most important part of this show. Well, the two things that are the most important part of this show. One, every time you hear a vent alarm, it needs to be considered the same as someone announcing code blue. Everyone should rush to that room unless they hear someone shouting out, "I got it," because that person's already arrived and determined it's not a life threat. It is not acceptable for our patients to be disconnected from the ventilator while heavily sedated and no one recognize this immediately. And then every patient on the ventilator should have low, should have end-tidal CO2, and really the alarm should be built, and some of the vents will do this. They'll actually allow you to slave one of the lines from the end-tidal CO2 going to the monitor to the vent as well. That should be like a piercing, you know, your ears are bleeding type alarm if you've had no end-tidal CO2 for some period of time, whether it's 15 or 20 seconds. I've not seen the monitors really do that in a way that separates out that alarm from all the other dumb alarms like the patient's tachycardic or they had a run of three beats of PVCs. You know, that is a alarm that, like, I'd want to be the most annoying thing in the world, and I'd much prefer those, three beats of PVC to be a more mild, gentle alarm. Now, maybe yours already does that and separates out life threats from non-life threats, but ours don't, and I think it would be good if it did. All right, I'm sure I'm missing stuff. I'm sure there's better ways I could have presented some of this, so tell me in the comments at mcrit.org/239. Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying, if you're coming to Essentials, remember, register with MCRIT19 or send me an email if you've already registered. And goodbye.